Hey, everybody, welcome in to Speak Up. My name is Barbara. As usual, we have a great program coming your way. You know, you all know that America's great nationwide celebrations are underway this year and especially next year, called America 250. The purpose is to educate all of us about what really happened leading up to the Declaration of Independence, the beauty of that declaration, and then after our Revolutionary War years, ultimately our founders faced the challenge of forming a union of 13 colonies into an enduring system. Unlike any nation on earth, the work of creating our Constitution. My guest, Sean Morgan, loves America, and he is a student and a teacher of our great history. He's here again to help us understand some of the forces and divine wisdom of God that has led our nation from before even its foundation. And a heads up, Sean will be back in September to go deeper into the Constitution itself. All right, I'm jazzed. All that coming right after these messages.
At Winteridge, it is built into our mission to give as much back to the community as it provides for us. Our Bags for Change program helps facilitate just that. Each time you bring a reusable bag, you have an opportunity to donate 10 cents to a local nonprofit of your choice. At the end of each cycle, we donate 100% of the proceeds to those local organizations. We are actively seeking new applicants. To submit your nonprofit, please stop in and see Susie. Winteridge, your community choice for local, natural, and delicious at the corner of Lake and Boyer in Sandpoint.
Does your pet need to be spayed or neutered? At Better Together Animal Alliance, we offer affordable, high-quality spay and neuter services to keep your pets happy and healthy. This includes a veterinarian exam, anesthesia, surgery, pain management, and even a free microchip, all at a low cost to you. Plus, every dog also gets a nail trim. Give your pet the care they deserve. Schedule today. Visit bettertogetheranimalalliance.org to learn more.
Join Gem State Flooring and Design for their grand opening on August 9th in Sagal. See the newest flooring and cabinet showroom in Bonner County and stay for grand opening product discounts and a day of fun, food, beverages, and music. Highway 95 in Sagal, next to North Idaho Flood and Fire. Gem State Flooring and Design. Over 40 brands of carpet, tile, vinyl, and laminate flooring for residential and commercial, plus cabinets from Crystal and Fabiwood. Gem State Flooring and Design's grand opening Saturday, August 9th from 10 to 2 p.m. On Facebook, Gem State Flooring and Design.
The back-to-school deals at Kohl's are so good, it'll feel like spoiling yourself. With 20% off the stuff your kids will actually wear, like jeans, tees, sneakers, and more. You can do it all without overdoing your budget. See? Sometimes parents get spoiled, too. Head to Kohl's or Kohl's.com to start the year off right for less. Select styles. Coupon ends August 10th. Some exclusions apply. See store or Kohl's.com for details.
For nearly 2,000 severely injured veterans, everyday life has become filled with barriers. So we build specially adapted homes at Homes for Our Troops. And thanks to our donors and supporters, this life-changing gift of freedom is provided mortgage-free to these veterans. But we need you to join us, too, in completing this important mission. Please visit hfotusa.org and help build homes and rebuild lives.
Back to school is on the brain. That means new notebooks, pencils, new everything. And while the kids are getting ready to get book smart, it's time for you to save smart with Straight Talk Wireless. Switch now and get a free Moto G 2025 with 5G when you activate select plans. Now that's a smart call. Get Straight Talk covered by Verizon's 5G network. Available at straighttalk.com and Walmart. Offer valid through 10/19/25. Taxes and fees apply. Purchase of Gold Unlimited plan or higher required for offer. Must activate the plan in-store at Walmart. Cannot be combined with other offers.
Okay, welcome back in, everyone. Say hello and welcome back to Sean Morgan. Sean, thank you for being with us today.
Hey, thank you. Glad to be here.
I just love this stuff. I love America, as I know you do, and I love all the background and history that we've got. It's so rich. So let's begin with the what was going on that was leading up to the Declaration. Kind of remind our audience of what was going on.
Yeah, so we had... you know, obviously last episode or whatever you want to call it, we talked all about the Declaration. If people want to go back and listen to that. But just sort of a review is that we had these colonies, these British colonies in America, and they were being treated unfairly by the British Crown. They weren't being treated the same as their countrymen back in England. They were being taken advantage of because the king had just finished up this 7 years war. He had a lot of debt he had to pay, so he started taxing the colonists, trying to extort money from them to pay for the war. We were involved in that. We called it the French and Indians War. And, you know, I think we mentioned that George Washington actually fought for the British mm-hmm. against the French and Indians in that war. And by the time that the war was over, they started imposing these very different taxes. And that wasn't the beginning of it. It goes back even further. We had little military skirmishes, the Boston Massacre. There was a standoff between the citizens of Boston and the British Army. And somebody fired a shot that turned into a massacre. You know, it was a few people that were killed. I think you have to have three people for it to be considered a massacre. And I think there were five who were killed. Not that that's not a big deal, but, you know, it exactly. doesn't sound like it was thousands of people who were slaughtered.
Yeah, it's important to remember that, I mean, there might have been a few visionaries who had looked down the road and said, we need to be independent. But wouldn't you agree that for the most part, at this point, everyone just wanted some kind of fairness coming? They were British citizens,
right?
And they were just living here. They weren't Americans, quote unquote. They were British citizens living here, and they wanted the king. They wanted to be loyal to the king, but they wanted the king, and they wanted to be represented in Parliament. You know, that's what they were really after at the beginning.
That's absolutely right. Like when these taxes were imposed, like the Stamp Act or the Coercive Acts, things like this, the Continentals or the colonists had no say in that. It was just imposed on them by right. Parliament, and they're like, this is not fair. You know, you're taxing us without giving us an opportunity to argue against it. We don't have an opportunity to debate it. So there was the cry of no taxation without representation.
So accelerated. How did it get accelerated then as we just ultimately ended up with a Declaration of Independence was the only solution that they thought would work?
Right. They had done several things to try and reach out to the king, to reach out to their countrymen in England, to address Parliament. You know, they were trying all the channels that they had available to them to have their grievances addressed, and it just was not working. So they called together this First Continental Congress, and this was the first time that the separate colonies came together and said, hey, we can work together. We need to do something.
And this was about when? Maybe in the 1771? I mean, it was before 1775, maybe.
Yeah, first Continental Congress was in 1774.
Okay, 1774.
It was very short-lived.
Okay. So you had mentioned before we went on the air about Thomas Paine. Because he was kind of he's like the Rush Limbaugh of the river. Well, kind of like, I mean, he was like a rallying cry.
Right, he was a political
pamphlets.
Activist.
And he was really, you know, revving things up a little bit, wasn't he? What was he doing?
Yeah, so he was an Englishman. He came over, you know, Benjamin Franklin helped him come over in 1774, I think it was, and political theorist and philosopher. And he wrote the pamphlet Common Sense, and that got wide distribution throughout the colonies, and that started to get people thinking in a different way that, you know, well, maybe the monarch is a tyrant, and we need to break away. We need to establish an independent country or independent existence from the monarchy in England because we are just not being represented. We're being taken advantage of. We're being tyrannized. He's got his army over here doing us dirty, and we just need to call a stop to this.
Boy, that's important to emphasize. The British Army, they were over here already. There were skirmishes happening, this was not just like a short-term thing, like just a few months. This has been going on for years.
Years and years.
I was just going to say Boston Tea Party was 1773, And there were things happening in the 1760s and the 1770s where the just unfair things that they couldn't work out over time.
Right. Yeah. 1770 was the Boston Massacre.
Oh, you know? Okay.
So it goes back, and it goes back even further than that. I mean, if we start at the beginning, 1608, I think the Virginia Charter, and you had the first colony in mm-hmm. Jamestown, and things were going fairly well. But then as there was productivity and riches being made, that was being sent back to England, and it was just a, for all intents and purposes, a cash cow over here.
Tobacco,
cotton.
Yeah,
these are different commodities that were used, and the king was just using it to get rich. You know, he wasn't interested in having, you know, an American experiment or liberty or anything like that.
Right.
This was just resources to be exploited. He sent people over here to do that.
We were just kind of serfs. Really, he was a tyrant toward these colonies, even though they were British citizens. The other thing that we kind of went over last time we were together and that I want to repeat, people are, of course, rightfully looking forward 1776 Declaration of Independence, July 4th. But leading up again, in just this year, we'd already had Paul Revere make his ride. We had the battles of Lexington and Concord, and the defeat. Where do we have that defeat? At Bunker Hill. Mm-hmm. There had been a pretty big defeat of the Americans, or the Continental Army under George Washington that was defeated. We already had a Continental Army, and George Washington was the commander-in-chief. I mean, things were really going yeah. on leading up to, right?
Yeah, that Continental Congress established an army, and they made George Washington the commander-in-chief of that army. And he was not a super popular general. You know, he suffered a lot of losses. So, you know, there were people looking to have him replaced. There were people looking to get rid of him. There was not a lot of confidence in him in some cases. Alexander Hamilton was his personal secretary, and they came to disagree with each other, and they parted ways. But then later on, they came back together and worked together on the Constitution. So, George Washington was a pivotal figure in the Revolution and in the
early years of
the march towards independence.
Yes, yes. And then of course, after that, as the first president. So let's recap the Declaration itself. You know, what did they finally say in this Declaration that was so important?
So the Second Continental Congress came together, and they sent out the Olive Branch Accords, or the Olive Branch letter to the king, one last attempt. They knew it wouldn't work, but they were doing their due diligence to try and make peace with the king, to try and have their concerns addressed. And when that failed, they finally said, okay, we've got to declare independence. We've got to break away from this king, and this will mean war, but we've got to do it. So this group of 56 men came together in Philadelphia. They sat down and they wrote out the Declaration of Independence. They actually sent what they called the Committee of Five away. That included Thomas Jefferson, Benjamin Franklin, John Adams, Robert Livingston, and Roger Sherman to actually go draft it. Thomas Jefferson was the primary author of it. And they put together a list of grievances, 27 grievances, I think it was, that lined out exactly why they were, you know, upset with the king, what he had been doing to them, just as sort of an evidence of his tyranny.
They wanted a record of why they were doing this.
Yeah.
Of the grievances, as you call them, that lined up, that they could no longer tolerate.
Right. Not just a record per se, but a declaration to the world.
Yes.
Like, you know, we are impelled to separate from Britain, and this is why.
Yes.
You know, and within the Declaration, they had that beautiful list of you know, natural rights, or whatever you might want to call it, where they say that we're endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And this just kind of laid it out that we're independent and free people. We're not subject to the tyranny of one person.
And tyranny being the important word, because we know in the years to follow, they established government, where there's like some shared power going on, but that does not mitigate against our right to life, to liberty, and the pursuit of happiness as a free person by our rights given by God, not by government.
Absolutely. We become citizens rather than subjects.
Oh, that's good. Everybody needs to write that down. We become citizens. We are not subjects. Excellent.
Yeah. So they have this list of grievances. A lot of these grievances are later addressed in the Constitution. You know, for example, one of the grievances, the first one here, they wrote down referring to the king. He says he has refused his assent to laws the most wholesome and necessary for the public good. You know, we've asked for laws to be written to protect us, and he refuses to assent to those laws. You know, maybe the laws got written and he just would not enact them. So later, when we get to the Constitution next month, we'll see in Article 1, Section 7, that the legislature has been given the power to override the executive veto. Mm-hmm. So if the president doesn't want a law to happen, he can veto it. But if the people want the law to happen, they can override that veto.
They can override his veto, which, of course, nobody could override the king. Once
exactly.
The king put his stamp on it, it was a done deal.
Yeah. And I mean, many of these, I was going through it and trying to find a constitutional answer to every single one of these grievances. And I found many. I haven't completed that little study. But another one here, he says that he has called together the legislative bodies in places unusual, uncomfortable, and distant from our depository of public records for the sole purpose of fatiguing them into compliance with his measures.
Mm.
So, you know, you have to do a week-long horseback ride to some distant place to meet up at the king's command, and all your books and records and everything's back home. And it just made it very inconvenient. I don't want to be here anymore. Okay, fine. You can have your way. I'm leaving.
Right.
Well,
what about, go ahead.
I was going to say the Constitution addresses that because they say that Congress will meet on a particular day and there will be a seat of Congress, a seat of government in Washington, D.C., what turned out to be Washington, D.C. So we knew where we're going to go. We knew when we're going to be there. And that alleviated that kind of a problem.
Right. And election of not a king, but of a president who could be replaced.
Yeah. Yep.
What about the grievance of taxation without representation?
Same thing. You know, towards the bottom of this list of grievances, or about halfway through, I think it's about the 17th, they complain that he has imposed taxes on us without our consent. So in the Constitution, when we get there, Article 1, Section 8 gives Congress the power to control taxing with the elected representation. So we elect people to represent us. They go in and have the discussion about taxation.
And the same thing happens. They have to seek re-election.
Yep.
In order to maintain their seat if they do something that we don't want. I just wish so many people would remember that in today's political environment and vote, vote, vote. Honestly, I do care how you vote, but I more care that you do vote, that
right.
You register and you take advantage.
Along with that, it's important to know who you're voting for.
Yes, you know. To be an informed voter.
Exactly.
Yeah, I always say don't vote because of a yard sign. I was surprised, Sean, that there was one of the grievances was a denial of trial by jury. Did they have that in England at the time, or where did that concept come from?
Well, if you think about how a monarchy is structured, you've got a king, and he is the ultimate authority. You know, and if you go back a little bit further before the Glorious Revolution in England, the king was the ultimate power.
Mm-hmm.
You had parliament there to kind of address and assist, but the king was the final say. So combining the power of the executive, he ran the army, he had the power of the sword with the power of making the laws and judging them, it's a lost cause. If the king doesn't like your position, you're going to lose. So that was part of what we'll see in this idea of federalism, where we separate those powers out, and we have now a legislative branch, an executive branch, and a judicial branch that are independent, but you know they work together. And just the idea of a trial without a jury, we say this person's judge, jury, and executioner all in one, and
yes.
that is that is a problem because it denies people their rights and their due process to prove themselves innocent.
This is a completely off-the-wall question, but, you know, I do this to my guests. The Magna Carta, I mean, isn't there something in the Magna Carta about this representation thing, or what? What was it? Do you know? Can you help me out here?
So Magna Carta goes back to 1215 AD.
Right, which is a way long earlier. Time ago.
King John, if you remember the old, I think it was a Disney cartoon of Robin Hood.
Yes.
The lion there, Prince John, that represented King John. And what had happened, and it was sort of the first peeling away of power from the monarch.
Okay.
And it wasn't necessarily for the people. For their benefits, but for his barons and his lords, you know.
Okay, the privileged few.
They were peeling power away from him and forcing him to, you know, treat them a little bit more fairly. I think he later reneged on that offer, but the Magna Carta was this first sort of document that started to peel away the tyrannous power or the... tyranny is not a wrong word, but I don't want to classify everything as bad.
Power.
Absolute power. That's perfect.
Yeah.
Of the monarch.
You know, what's interesting about that too, not to stay on this, but is that, I mean, the people then that were beneath the barons and the earls and the privileged few, they begin to see something and learn something, like maybe some of this can be granted to us. I mean, whether they knew it or not, as the years rolled by, that they must have been able to see. They had a role in receiving some of these privileges.
Yeah, I mean, it's short-lived because you're talking about an individual's lifetime, and these sort of changes are generational. They take years and years, centuries sometimes, to change. That's why I think it was Ronald Reagan said, once freedom is lost, it's lost forever.
And it only takes a generation
to begin to lose it. Yes, so people would see that, and you'll have little rebellions here and there. You know, I think of the movie Braveheart, and Mel Gibson was there, and this was about that time. But they see that that they want to be independent, and they're under the thumb of the king, so they're going to fight back.
Yes, or they can have some fight back. And one other quick thought for your comment is, wasn't the Enlightenment then like 200 years later, or am I all lost in my centuries? But somewhere you could begin to see even more of this coming up and coming to light.
Yeah, so the whole idea of Enlightenment thinking takes place in the 18th century, 16th century, maybe 17th century rather, and it's just more of this sort of thinking about how things can be, and I mean, that's where we get these fellows like Thomas Paine and Montesquieu, and they're called the Enlightenment thinkers. So it's this kind of time frame that it was happening.
And here we are now 100 years after that in the colonies, where they are really, really saying, we want this. We want to be free. We are free, granted by God. All right, we are late for our commercial break. We're going to take that commercial break right now.
Brown's Northside Machine and Gear has been your local diesel and heavy equipment expert since 1990, serving the logging, trucking, and construction industry. They carry a large inventory of truck and heavy equipment parts, and their ASE and Master ASE certified technicians specialize in repairing all types of diesel and gas trucks, pickups, off-road vehicles, RVs, and heavy equipment. Stop by the shop on Triangle Drive at Ponderay, Monday through Thursday, 7 to 5, and Fridays until 6, Brown's Northside Machine and Gear.
Hi, this is Andrew O'Neill, Emergency Manager for Boundary County. When living in wildfire country like Boundary County, everyone should have a plan for evacuating their family and important possessions in case of emergency. If you had to evacuate your home due to a wildfire, for example, where would you go? What would you take with you? Where would you take your livestock? How long would it take you to leave? Planning ahead can save you precious time. For tips on making a plan for your family, download a free Ready, Set, Go evacuation planning brochure from the Boundary County website, or ask your local fire chief for a copy. Also, stay informed by signing up for Boundary County emergency alerts using the link on the Boundary County website. Being prepared can save time and keep your family safe. This message has been brought to you by the Boundary County Office of Emergency Management and the Boundary County Fire Prevention Co-op.
My whole identity had been wrapped up in being a soldier. To have that so violently ripped from me when I was wounded, I was lost for a very long time. when Wounded Warrior Project came into my life, being around the other warriors, people that had similar experiences that I did, it was a game changer for me. Having King join the group, that was the beginning of a really good friendship.
It's a good time.
I first heard about Wounded Warrior Project through CQ. And at first I was kind of like, I don't know if I qualify. But having been a part of it, it's kind of taught me that it's not just the wounds that you can see, but it's those that you can't.
When you do something like a peer support group with Wounded Warrior Project and come together from different walks of life, man, the growth is incredible. If not for Wounded Warrior Project, I really don't think that I'd be here today.
See how we help warriors combat stigma at woundedwarriorproject.org/combatstigma.
Join Gem State Flooring and Design for their grand opening on August 9th in Sagal. See the newest flooring and cabinet showroom in Bonner County and stay for grand opening product discounts and a day of fun, food, beverages, and music. Highway 95 in Sagal, next to North Idaho Flood and Fire. Gem State Flooring and Design. Over 40 brands of carpet, tile, vinyl, and laminate flooring for residential and commercial, plus cabinets from Crystal and Fabiwood. Gem State Flooring and Design's grand opening Saturday, August 9th from 10 to 2 p.m. On Facebook, Gem State Flooring and Design.
News Talk 97.1.
Hey everybody, as usual, we've got it going on. Honestly, I keep saying we're going to leave the microphones on in some of these commercials, but we can't do that because we have to do business with our commercials. My guest today is Sean Morgan. He knows so much about American history and world history in the sense of the way it relates to us. Sean, I appreciate your being here fielding my questions. I feel like I'm in a history class and I appreciate it so much. So, all right. So the American Declaration of Independence, 1776, next year it'll be 250 years to celebrate America 250. And then we had the war. And, skirmishes and battles had already happened, but then we were in the war for real, from beginning, let's say, in 1776 all the way to 1781. So briefly, what was going on? I mean, that's like, what is that? That's 5 years.
Yeah, and the war actually started before the Declaration.
Before that, but you know,
this was a struggle, and this was just pushing back the British, getting them to the point of surrendering. There was no way that, I mean, the American forces or the Continentals realized they cannot beat Britain in a war.
How did we win then? Because we did win. They didn't have money or uniforms.
They had to make it undesirable to fight. They had to get the British to quit rather than beat them.
How did they do that?
Just by continuing to fight against them and not giving up. Not necessarily standing in a line and letting each other shoot at each other, you know, and employing guerrilla tactics and just doing everything they could to harass and demoralize the British troops.
Yes.
And get them to finally say, okay, we're going to leave. The other thing that we had going for us was we had what we call the home field advantage. We were fighting to protect our homes.
Yes.
The Brits, if they lose, they're like, okay, we lost, we'll go home. We're not out anything other than some time.
And their families were back in England.
Nice and safe.
Nice and safe. So persistence, and of course, many, many people will tell you divine intervention.
Oh, yeah.
That there was just so much that happened. What was it when they went across the river, and like on New Year's Eve or something, and the Brits were all, they'd been drinking and celebrating the new year, and under the cover of fog and everything was a big surprise attack. What battle was that? That was
Christmas Eve.
Christmas Eve,
they were crossing the river, Delaware River, and they were going to attack. They found out that there was some Hessian mercenaries on the other side of the river, so they wanted to sneak across. Nobody, you know, it's Christmas Eve. Who's going to go to war? We're going to be at home eating goose or something.
Right.
Well, they did. They crossed the river, and they attacked these Hessians, and they were able to defeat those mercenaries before they were able to attack the American troops or the colonists.
Right.
Colonials. I don't know what the proper term is, but
they were Americans. They just didn't know it yet.
Yeah.
All right, so there were other things like that. But finally, the British surrendered at Yorktown in 1781. I mean, that was a pretty amazing thing that they did surrender. How I mean, did the king, they had to communicate with the king, and the king sent back, yes, surrender? Is that the way that went down?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I'd have to look. I'm sure it would have come from Parliament. But it just finally got to the point where the British pride could no longer entertain all these defeats and what they were facing, to where they finally said, okay, we're gonna stop fighting. We're going to give up.
Right. And probably they didn't value these colonies. I don't know. We had been taxation, wallet for them, but maybe they just felt like, oh, just let them go.
Yeah, it's kind not of the, that important. The juice isn't worth the squeeze anymore.
Exactly, exactly. So this is what's interesting to me for your comment. So the war, the big war, essentially, the surrender was 1781. There were skirmishes and naval battles after that. But it wasn't until 1783, 2 years later, that we finally had a peace treaty called the Treaty of Paris. So how did all that happen? What was going on there?
Again, I'm not, super expert on anything, even though you give me all these props about being a history teacher or whatnot, I'm not. But I know that they did retire to Paris, Paris.
Paris.
France had been an ally of ours in this war. Anytime France gets the opportunity to fight with the Brits, they're in, So
even
we were
today,
able.
Even today, I think.
Yeah, it's a long drawn out history of opposition with each other, but it takes time to come to terms. And this wasn't just like, okay, we give up, you win. There were certain things that were lined out in this Treaty of Paris. They talked about commerce and fishing rights up in off the coast of Canada, several items like that, as any treaty will have. It's basically a contract, an agreement between forces that this is how things are going to be.
They had a big discussion about boundaries. Mm-hmm. The French, the British, and what would be the Americans, they were all after certain boundaries. That was a
sure.
big part that took a lot of time on this Treaty of Paris.
Yeah, I mean, they all had colonies. We had the Spanish down in the south. You had the French up north. I mean, French Canada, Quebec is still heavily, the result of that influence from France at the time. But, there were so many other players in the area that they had to make agreements and say, this is how things are going to work out. This is who's going to get this land. This is who's going to be, on this side of the boundary, where you can fish, where you can gather firewood even.
Yeah, this is when Britain retained Canada, but we got all the way to the Mississippi River.
Right.
And really kind of beyond that a little bit, but everything was ours up to the Mississippi River.
Yeah, well, even some states, they had claims going all the way to the Pacific Ocean.
Yes.
So
these things had to be
cleaned up.
I have a question about communication. It was one of the reasons it took, 2 years from the surrender to the Treaty of Paris was because of communication. I mean, their communication was they had to actually send ships and, horses and to get back. Did all of this have to go through the king, or were they authorized to negotiate? It just took a long time. Benjamin Franklin, John Adams, and John Jay were all in Paris for this. So did they have to get back to, like, George Washington on any of this?
I'm sure that, well, not necessarily George Washington, but the Congress, yes.
The Congress, the Continental Congress.
They had to communicate. So shipping back in those times was much more, well, you should see what maritime map looks like today. At any given time, you've got 250,000 ships out to sea today.
Wow.
It's just crazy. But back then, you had ships going back and forth all the time, and you would be able to send
couriers.
Communication back and forth, and people would be able to transport back and forth. But it did take time.
That's
it wasn't jumping on a transatlantic flight and you're there in a few hours.
Cell phones or whatever.
Yeah, their cell phones weren't working yet. No email. So it was all handwriting, horses, ships,
So it was a big deal to do this. But then finally we got the Treaty of Paris. Meanwhile, and this is kind of what we want to get to closing out this segment and the next segment, is as the peace negotiations were finally getting closed up, meanwhile, back in America, articles of confederation, like what our government's going to look like, were already kind of ongoing, weren't they?
Yeah, there was the recognition that, okay, we've got 13 now independent states. But if we don't work together, as Benjamin Franklin said, if we don't hang together, we shall all hang separately.
Yes.
So they realized that they had to form some sort of a confederation or some sort of an agreement with each other to just support each other and prevent these large empires like France and Britain and Spain from harassing them or trying to put them back under the thumb of a tyrannical empire.
They knew they didn't want a king. They knew they didn't want tyranny.
Yep.
But it all had to be defined. I just can't even imagine. I mean, I know you believe it. I believe it with all my heart that without God's intervention, as Benjamin Franklin said many on many occasions, then none of this would have turned out like this, to be so powerful, so strong, and so good, and so enduring.
Yeah. Yeah. Benjamin Franklin's got a great quote. It's long. I haven't got it memorized. I can look at it real quick, but basically he said it's a miracle that we're able to come together and work together and accomplish what we've accomplished here. This was in reference to the Constitution,
yeah.
But the hand of God throughout the whole process was
it's
evident
true.
To
it
all of this, all of these founders
true.
And framers.
Well, while you find that quote, I think we want to hear that quote from Benjamin Franklin. We're going to take our last break. We're going to do that right now. We'll be right back.
Accidents happen, and when they do, more people reach out to Northwest Auto Body. Consistently voted the best auto body shop in the region, we offer guaranteed repairs by certified technicians using only state-of-the-art equipment. Our locally owned collision facilities have been serving North Idaho for nearly 50 years. Find us online or just stop on by. No appointments needed, no charge estimates, and advice is just good customer service. Remember, Northwest Auto Body in Sandpoint, Ponderay, and now in Bonner's Ferry.
Lenaque Realty has a land listing in Sunnyside, 5 acres just minutes from town in Schweitzer Mountain Resort, featuring mountain views and southern exposure, power and phone at property's edge, near the Idaho Club Golf Course, and 2.5 miles from a public boat launch on Lake Ponderay, just $289,000. Now's the time to list your property. For all your real estate needs, see the professionals at Lenaque Realty, lenaquerealty.com.
The Ponderay Winery, located at 301 Cedar Street in historic downtown Sandpoint, would like to invite you in to taste our 2024 Chardonnay, August Wine of the Month. We have an encore month of Heather Mira Peterson's fabulous artwork on display, and Lisa and her crew keep the cuisine options delicious and complimentary to our wide variety of award-winning wines. A full list of entertainment for the month can be found on our website at powine.com. Summer in North Idaho is stunning. Make it even better with a visit to the Ponderay Winery.
Cancer screening can save your life. Begin cervical screening at age 25. At 45, colorectal and breast screening. At 50, discuss lung screening with a doctor. Find resources for free and low-cost screening at cancer.org/get screen. This is a public service message from the American Cancer Society.
Come by boat or car for unforgettable waterfront dining. Pearls on the Lake in Hope is now open 7 days a week from 12 to 8. Enjoy a fresh new menu, tasty cocktails, and live music on beautiful Lake Ponderay. Visit pearlsonthelake.com to reserve your table today.
The back-to-school deals at Kohl's are so good, it'll feel like spoiling yourself. With 20% off the stuff your kids will actually wear, like jeans, tees, sneakers, and more. You can do it all without overdoing your budget. See? Sometimes parents get spoiled, too. Head to Kohl's or Kohl's.com to start the year off right for less. Select styles. Coupon ends August 10th. Some exclusions apply. See store or Kohl's.com for details.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Stay cool this summer with AC Pro refrigerant at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Right now, get a $15 gift card after rebate with the purchase of select AC Pro refrigerant products that include a hose and gauge. If your vehicle's AC is blowing hot air, beat the heat with AC Pro. Visit your O'Reilly Auto Parts store or shop online at O'ReillyAuto.com.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
News Talk 97.1. KSBT KBFI.
All right, it's all about American history today with Sean Morgan. We are finished with the war is over, the Declaration of Independence has been declared. Okay, and then the war got finished. And then we have the Treaty of Paris, and now we're up to kind of the first part of what was going to be the first iteration, I guess, of our U.S. Constitution called Articles of Confederation. And talk about that, because there were some issues there.
Right. So prior to the Treaty of Paris.
Oh, wait a minute. I forgot. We want to do that Benjamin Franklin quote.
Okay, yeah.
I'm sorry. Let's begin with that, because from the beginning to the end, God's been involved in this. And this is a quote that's like a little bit later on with the Constitution, but nevertheless, it's the position that Benjamin Franklin took time after time about divine providence.
Yes. So during the Constitutional Convention, which would be in 1787, Benjamin, you know, they were knocking heads. They couldn't agree on everything. We had competing interests trying to form this new American, trying to update the Articles of Confederation, form a new American government that will work in the interests of everybody. And we'll talk about the Confederation, Articles of Confederation next. But Benjamin Franklin called everybody's attention to what they were doing. And he said, in the beginning of the contest with Great Britain, we were sensible to the dangers, and we daily had prayer in this room for divine protection. Our prayers, sir, were heard, and they were graciously answered. This is in reference to the debates that they had for the Declaration of Independence. All of us who were engaged in the struggle must have observed frequent instances of a superintending providence in our favor. Have we now forgotten that powerful friend, or do we imagine we no longer need his assistance? I have lived a long time, sir, and the longer I live, the more convincing proofs I see of this truth, that God governs in the affairs of men. And if a sparrow cannot fall to the ground without his notice, is it probable that an empire shall rise without his aid? We have been assured, sir, in the sacred writings, that except the Lord build the house, they labor in vain who build it. I firmly believe this, and I also believe that without his concurring aid, we shall succeed in this political building no better than the builders of Babel. And he called for daily prayer during the convention to write the Constitution.
You know, we know that not every man or woman that was involved in this incredible formation of our nation were either divine God believers or Jesus followers, but we know that the majority were. And Benjamin Franklin clearly is talking about the power of prayer and the grace of God. And so it's just important to remember that that's true. Yeah. About our nation, about our foundation.
Yeah, and you know, people often say that Benjamin Franklin was non-religious, but I would say he was probably the least religious. He was not unreligious.
Yeah, everybody's got different walks, different places where they are with God. And like 3, 4, 5 things that he said within that framework that you just read were directly out of the Bible. Mm-hmm. They are directly from the Bible quotes. All right, so here we are now. They're knocking their heads together, as you say, for the Articles of Incorporation, kind of the pre-Constitution. Tell our audience about that.
So we've declared independence. We've got 13 now independent states is what the Declaration of Independence referred to them as. This is essentially 13 small countries, like you might see in Europe.
Yes.
And they realize that they're facing, you know, the French Empire, the British Empire, the Spanish Empire. And the state of Rhode Island is not going to be able to fend for itself if one of those decides they want to take on, you know, they want to re-engage in this conflict. You know, we beat the British, maybe now the French want to have a turn at us, or the Spanish. So they realize they have to work together. They've seen that they can work together because they had the First and Second Continental Congresses. They declared independence together. So now they're trying to form some kind of government. We're free, but how do we govern now? Because the laws in Virginia are not the same as the laws in Pennsylvania. So we have to somehow work together and come to agreement on certain things and be able to coexist peacefully with each other. So that's where this idea of the Articles of Confederation was brought to being. Again, that idea came out of the pamphlet Common Sense by Thomas Paine, but they started to work on drafting the Articles of Confederation, and they wanted it to be, they were concerned with another tyranny. They didn't want to impose now a new tyranny on themselves after they've just freed themselves. A great quote from another Mel Gibson movie. It's not all I watch, but the movie The Patriot, and there's not really any hard and fast historical basis for this, but Mel Gibson's character, Benjamin Martin, is in assembly there in South Carolina, and he makes the comment. He said, "Tell me, sir, why should I trade one tyrant 3,000 miles away for 3,000 tyrants 1 mile away?"
Exactly.
He said, an elected legislature can trample a man's rights just as easily as a king. So they were very wary of giving a centralized government too much power. And as a result, we got the Articles of Confederation, and we find out over time that they just do not have enough centralized power to deal with the problems that face this new group of states.
Their wariness of avoiding a new tyrant was kind of what weakened the Articles. But they had to go through that learning curve, didn't they? They had to see that they needed a central government that could tax to form and maintain an army.
Right. So the Articles of Confederation had several weaknesses. You know, they gave it only had a legislative body. There was no judiciary. There's no executive to carry out the wills of that legislature. They gave themselves the power to declare war, but they did not have the power to raise an army.
Right.
You know, they had to depend on the militias of the several states to provide fighters in the case of a war. So it kind of ties their hands like, okay, we're going to go to war with you, but we don't have an army, so it's kind of pointless. They didn't have the power to tax, so they couldn't pay for an army, or they couldn't pay the debts that the collective colonies had incurred through the War of the Revolution. Veterans from the Revolutionary War went without pay, and they just didn't have the ability to raise the funds. All they could do is ask the several states to donate money towards the common cause.
Kind of a volunteer thing.
Yeah, and they tried to do that. They tried to apportion, okay, you owe us this much based on your population, you owe us this much based on your population. And everybody's like, okay, fine, we owe you, but I'd rather owe you than cheat you out of it. They're not giving them the money.
So the Articles of Incorporation, so here they were forming this. Meanwhile, life goes on. Treaty of Paris is being negotiated. So, I mean, did they tried to impose some of the things that they put in the Articles of Incorporation, or the Articles
Confederation.
Of Confederation,
right.
And they just weren't working. Is that kind of what happened?
They just did not have the teeth. You know, they gave them power to do things, but they didn't give them the ability to put those into action.
So then how did they finally get to the point that we'll talk about it the next program next month in September, the U.S. Constitution? How did they finally say, you know, we need to revise? And ultimately they just threw it out and said, we need to totally rewrite this thing.
Yeah, they recognized the weaknesses that the Articles of Incorporation had. You know, there were several events that took place. There was a dispute on the Potomac River. Maryland, in their charter from the king, was given complete control of the Potomac River up to the border of Virginia. Well, Virginia, in their earlier charter, was given rights to the river. So now there's a conflict between these two states.
Boundaries.
They ended up working that out, you know, at George Washington's place in Mount Vernon. But they recognized the weakness of these Articles of Confederation, and they had to make changes. So they did come together in 1787 with the idea of making changes, and they realized that the Articles of Confederation were just insufficient for what needed to happen, and they ended up, rather than revising those, writing a whole new constitution.
Who's the big writers for the U.S. Constitution? That's going to have to be my last question.
Yeah, James Madison was the primary author there.
Okay.
And he put most of that together, and he brought the Virginia Plan, as we'll see next time. They kind of came together with an idea of what they wanted to do, even though they came together for a different purpose.
Oh, that's okay. Hold on to that. That's where we'll open the next program. Sean's going to be back. Do we know? I can't think of the date right now. It's like the 16th of September.
I think it was the 15th.
The 15th of September, which is just a couple of days before the United States Constitution Day. So we are going to celebrate the U.S. Constitution the next time. Sean, I can't thank you enough. You just, it just makes it so clear to me. It makes me so appreciate our country. God bless America.
Yeah, my pleasure. It's
all
a
right.
lot of fun.
That's it for today. Next week, we're changing gears and addressing a difficult reality. Do you know that on the average, there are 18 veteran suicides every day in America? And this is the second leading cause of death for our veterans under the age of 45. So I've got two veterans coming here to talk to us about this. Tom Lindley is the Bonner County Veteran services manager, and Dante Ramore, who has a program for healing and helping veterans through jiu-jitsu. So all that next Tuesday, reminding us all to slow down out on the roads and on the water, and may God richly bless you, my friends.